Hello, everybody, and welcome to Lady Flag, the aftermatch podcast of the LFC Red Poets. Tonight, we look back on an emotional day at Anfield when Jurgen Klopp said his farewell to over 60,000 people who would, you know, who were very emotional on the day and paid tribute not only to Jurgen, but to his coaching staff and both to Thiago and Joel Matip. I'm your host, Les Lawson. And tonight I'm joined by Tom Keegan and Pete Warburton as we look back on that emotional afternoon at Anfield. So, Pete, we'll start where we always start with the team news. And it was just a one change, really, wasn't it, with Robbo coming in for Joe Gomez?
Yeah, I think when I tried to second guess Jurgen, which is never a good thing to do, but I thought maybe Nunes might have got a start. And I thought maybe Canate may have got a start, but in fairness, it was, like you say, it was just Robbo coming in back to full fitness and the like. And it was a good, strong lineup. Obviously, you know, getting to the game, travelling to the game, and then meeting your mates and having a drink beforehand and that. We all agree that the actual football was a secondary thing yesterday. It was all about, you know, Jurgen Klopp and celebrating the 8.5, 9 years that he's been with us. But yeah, so it was a good, strong side. And I think Wolves put a decent side out as well. So even though it was a scratch rubber, there was nothing at stake for either side. It made for an entertaining game.
It was a strong bench as well, wasn't it, Tom? With no space on the bench for Bešetić or Tsimikas, as well as, you know, Thiago and Matip, who haven't featured, you know, well, Thiago hasn't featured hardly any time for 18 months and Matip since Christmas. So it was a really strong bench and you just looked at that and you thought, you know, why couldn't it have been like this sort of, you know, 6, 7 weeks ago?
Yeah, I think that's been one of the downsides, hasn't it, Les, when we look at the, we were stretched for players in the most important parts of the season, really. You know, like when the injuries come thick and fast and I suppose on looking back on that, it's nice to see everyone back. It's nice to see, you know, like to see everybody. I thought the team was good. I think that they more or less, the players deserved their place over the last couple of weeks because they've upped the tempo a little bit, haven't they? So I think I was happy with the team and the bench, really. There was nothing there you could be unhappy about.
The atmosphere, Pete, was really good, wasn't it? It reminded me very much of the last day of the Cop, but it was much better. If you see what I mean, I thought it was one of the right up there with one of the sort of better atmospheres, as you said or touched on earlier. It wasn't really much about the match. It was more about, you know, saying thank you, wasn't it, to Jurgen.
And also saying it in the right way as well. I mean, you know, I think there's been a few, you know, opposition fans who tried to take the mickey and have been a bit critical. But for what he's achieved in his time here, it was only fitting that he went out with such a good send-off. But it was quite palpable, really, because we came through the Birkenhead Tunnel on match day yesterday. And as soon as we came out the tunnel, people were walking up from Lime Street and from the city centre. And I said to our Jack, I said, I know Liverpool are playing, but I don't think I've seen so many red shirts in my life. Seems to be everyone decided to deck out in colours yesterday. And as you know, a lot of people now go the game sort of without colours on. You know, maybe they're going for the drink after the game or stuff like that. And they don't always wear the colours. But we drove up West Derby Road to go up to where we park. And it's just like a procession of red shirts. It was almost like years ago, like a special had been let off, you know, out of Lime Street and all these shirts were coming up. So hey, the atmosphere was building, you know.
Can I just say there that doesn't the stadium and it feel much better when you actually see this sea of red, and it must intimidate the opposition as well. And I don't understand why people are reticent to wear the colours for matches on a more regular basis, because there's no better sight in football than when Liverpool fans a singing You'll Never Walk Alone, or, you know, they're in the crowd and they're waving the scarves and it's just a sea of red and white, just like the Kop used to be in its heyday in the 70s. And, you know, I'm just hoping that what people have seen, and you've touched on it there over the past sort of couple of weeks, can move on into next season, because that could be a massive fillip for us and give us a massive advantage, you know, when we're getting in these tight games at home, where, you know, there's just this vibrant colour and, you know, the opposition will just shit themselves.
Yeah, I know. The other thing to add to that as well, Les, is I've got a good vantage point because I'm in the main stand, but I'm right on the D of the Anfield Road box in the lower section. And the noise that's generated from the upper Anfield Road now, I mean, Wolves, bless them, tried their best to sing a few, you know, to get behind their side, but the noise that comes down from that upper section now in the Anfield Road, and then, you know, there were times yesterday that, you know, everyone says, oh, the cops started singing. There were times the main stand was starting. There were times when the, you know, I call it the Kemlin Road, still the Kenny Dalglish stand was singing. And it was just reverberating all around the ground. And you could see the water. You know, some of the away fans that come now who haven't actually been to Anfield since the Anfield Road's been redeveloped, they're going to have a hell of a shock when they turn up, because it reminded me, I always thought, there was a couple of grounds when I used to travel away regularly when I was younger. And obviously Manchester United was one, because we were in the scoreboard end in the terrace, and the noise that used to just come down from the stand above. But Villa Park always did it for me. We'd be in the Witten Lane end and they'd have a stand behind you and they'd be at either side of you. And the noise that was generated, I went to the game when the year Villa won the league in 81, I think it was, 80-81, and Mortimer scored, and the noise that came down from then said, and I think it's happening now at Anfield, and the actual atmosphere, and especially now on big European nights as well, it's going to be fantastic. But I mean, I'll hold my hand up, Les, I don't wear me colours the game. I wear a pin badge or I wear a t-shirt and stuff like that, but I haven't worn a replica shirt for a long, long time.
It doesn't have to be a replica shirt though, does it? It can just be like a red t-shirt from Mix.
I wore one of Mix shirts yesterday with the Unity of Strength on, with the Liver Bird. So yeah. I was certainly flying my colours, but it wasn't a replica shirt, you know.
No, but it doesn't. That's the thing, Pete. It doesn't have to be. It can be, you know, you can show your support in many ways. It could even just be a plain red t-shirt with no logo on at all. You know, and take a scarf which you can put in the car or whatever. But it just makes it look so much better. I mean, I've been saying since that Upper Anfield Road stand opened that when you looked at from the Kop and you were seeing, you know, You'll Never Walk Alone being sung, the Upper Anfield Road looked absolutely magnificent with them all with the scarves in there. Okay. And they were putting the cops to shame at times with the way the colour was in there. And I think a few people have got together. I think they've noticed that. And that's where the sort of flag days have come from. But that yesterday was, Tom, was one of the best I've ever seen. I noticed, you know, the other week, you know, you appeared through the crowd when I was meeting you outside, out on the concourse. And you come through and you appeared like a vision of Shankly walking through there with your tracksuit top on, and it looked really good. You know what I mean, with that old style of stuff. So there's, what I'm trying to say is, there's different ways you can do it, isn't it, Tom?
I've done it again yesterday. Les, I wore the same shirt yesterday. You know, for I think that was John Machen was the instigator of that. I think it's a great idea, and I think what made it the last couple of games has made it as up the ante, really. I think that it's been sunny for the last two games. That makes a difference. You know, when people come out with shorts, shirts, and with that brings it out. But you know what I noticed yesterday? I noticed in the concourses and especially down at the Kop, you know, down at the bottom about 104 all the way where we meet. And I've never seen so many people in. I said to the lads I was with, I said, you know what? It feels like there's more people in the ground today than normally is. The concourse was absolutely buzzing, and right before the game in the cop. And I noticed that all the way through to the ground. What Peter said, I think what that's done, the new stand at the Annie Road end, I think what it's done, it's made the ground, like more balanced. And so the noise level reverberates all the way around the ground. I think what you were talking about, Peter, was when he was singing. For I think what me and Les were talking about last night when we had a chat, I think it was 7 minutes solid towards the end of the game of he was singing. It was, you see what Jürgen said to me, and like it was coming just when it was dipping in some parts of the ground, other parts of the ground took it up. So it like it sort of it echoed all the way around and each side of the ground. Sort of, so I've never known it. I'm saying to Lee walking out of the ground, the atmosphere. I've been to some amazing games where you see some amazing atmosphere. You know what people say about the Chelsea one and St. Etienne 77, but like to me, the big ones to me was 2000, was 2019 when we beat Barcelona. I've never heard anything like that in my life. But yesterday, surpassed that. It was a joy to be in the ground yesterday. And like it sort of sets the tempo, doesn't it, for the team? If you've got that level of support, you cannot help but be intimidated. I thought it was amazing yesterday, Les.
Peace. Yeah. Just imagine, you know what I just said before. And Tommy's just carried on, you know, with, you know, giving his opinion. But just imagine, you know, if we'd have been like that against Crystal Palace, if we'd have been like that against Atlanta, instead of the way it was, a little bit flat, what that could have achieved at the end of the day. But we weren't, because people get it in the heads that it's wrong to wear colours. I'm not saying that's what you're saying, by the way. But I'm just giving, you know, people have sort of said, haven't they, you know, oh, if you wear colours, you're a wolf. Well, you're not, because...
No, I don't agree with that, because, no. I mean, where we go for the drink beforehand, there's you know, there's some... We go to a place where a lot of Irish lads come, but there's a lot of Scousers in there as well, and a lot of them wear the colours. It's just, I don't know, it's just become a fashion. I mean, I go back, as I say, to the... My first game was the 60s, and all through the 60s to the late 70s, everyone wore colours. You know, everyone wore a scarf and that. And then suddenly, you know, the thing coming where, you know, it was the sports gear, the tachinis. I mean, I one of the first things I did when I got a job was buy a tachini top, and it cost me a week's wages then, believe it or not, just for a tachini, you know. And every week it was like a fashion parade. And I suppose people of my age, they still sort of just go the game casual. And I don't mean the casuals in the worst sense of the word, but they just go casually dressed, because a lot of them stay out, go into town after or stuff like that. And there are places that won't allow colours in case it causes any trouble, you know. But I don't look down on anyone who wears the colours. Certainly I'm not one of them, but I as I say, I've not worn a Liverpool top, you know, a replica top as such for, oh, Christ knows how long. It's been a long time.
As
that's
said.
Just my choice, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, in the winter, I wear a Liverpool, a proper Liverpool bobblehead all through the winter with a lighter bird on, so I show me colours then.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit more circumspect when it comes to wearing, like, kit. I was saying to our Jack yesterday, should we buy the new shirt for next season? Because in fairness, I don't particularly like it. I said, should we buy the new shirt for next season and we'll all go togged up next season? And he just gave me this look, because our Jack's following me. He comes in his, you know, in his boss tops and his whatever's, you know, the Monster X and all stuff like that, because he's a younger lad, you know. And he just gave me this look as if to say, you dare turn up with one of them. But I don't look down on anyone. Where I was sitting yesterday, I ended up sitting with our Jack second half, like I normally do, because there's always a spare seat by him. And I'd say 90% of the people all around me, some had the new top on, but loads had proper, replica tops or red tops on.
Yeah.
And I think the thing, like you're saying, is I think the best advert for anything like that is when you look at it seems to have taken off for some reason in the Bundesliga. You look at Frankfurt and that, and they all wear all white or
Yeah.
uniform all red, but it's that yellow wall at Dortmund, isn't it? I
Yeah.
mean, that's fantastic when you see that, like.
I know, and that's what I just want Liverpool, to get back to being the vibrance. The vibrant colour, and especially with the scarves. But as I say, people don't have to buy the replica shirt. You can just wear a red t-shirt for a
I
mix
think it's
or
more the atmosphere for me
yeah.
that is.
But that
I think,
helps,
yeah,
I think it helps.
whether the colours is like if people choose to wear them, that's a good thing. While like Sir John Mack, I don't knock anybody. If sometimes if a and what's it called? Most of the times I was like Peter, where and you go casually. But I think it's more the atmosphere. If everybody goes to the game and sang, that's more important to me than everyone wearing the red shirts.
I
But
think it both helps, Tom. I think it both
I think it
helps.
helps. I think it helps in the summer or at the start of the season when it's bloody freezing in the winter. Yeah, you know what I mean? People are practicalities. But you listen, you hit the nail on the head when you said about Crystal Palace. But I was just thinking to myself, I think what happened with Crystal Palace and Atlanta at that time. We did a lull, hadn't we? We did. We'd gone out to the FA Cup to Manchester United. We dropped the points at Manchester United, which sort of knocked us. And then we were right in going into West Ham and bad Atlanta. And I think, unfortunately for Liverpool, as you said earlier, with injuries and everything, that was probably the key. I think had we have beaten Manchester United, I think we'd have probably walloped Atlanta, and the atmosphere would have been totally different. The same with Crystal Palace. I've no, even though Crystal Palace are on a great run of form, I'll mention the 5-0 to Aston of Aston Villa. But I think that was more to do with that. But I do agree. I love to see the atmosphere like at Anfield yesterday because there's no better ground in the country when it's bouncing. I thought it was super. I thought everything about it yesterday and the people who organised the flag day and everything, I thought they were amazing. I thought everything was superb yesterday.
Yeah, I totally agree. So Pete, just getting back to the match, which, as you said, was a little bit of the of sort of the second thing on everybody's mind yesterday. But the first half was really about the sending off and the two Liverpool goals, and then the crowd deciding to serenade a lot of the players who'd contributed to the success under Jurgen Klopp, which I thought was a fantastic gesture.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a bit like a desert island disc for the first 20 minutes, wasn't it? All the Owl songs were coming out, and it was great. Going like the first real major incident, it happened sort of not right in front of us, but it was our side of the pitch towards the halfway line. And as soon as the lad went in on the tackle, I said to the lad next to me, "That's a red card, that." I thought he'd actually got in two-footed, but I've seen the replay since, and it wasn't two-footed, but it was a nasty tackle. And I said, "That's a red, that." And he said, "Do you reckon?" I said, "It was a nasty tackle, that." And then obviously, I think he did he go as far as giving the yellow, and then he went to the. And I wasn't surprised, in fairness, when the red card came out. And then, as I say, I've seen replays of it. And it did look nasty, and it was right on his sort of instep, and it must have been very painful. But he seems to get a lot of them tackles on him, doesn't he, Macca? He doesn't mind getting stuck in, but he seems to be on the end of a lot of these sort of over the ball tackles, if you want. But I did think that was a bit naughty for, the type of game it was. As I say, it was a competitive game. But I don't think there was any need, certainly, for a tackle like that. It was just a bit too much. And I think someone said to me, it looks a bit like the Curtis tackle at Tottenham. But I think with Curtis, he actually won the ball. This lad got nowhere near the ball, Semedo. And yeah, I think it was a warranted red card for him. And then that was just before the half hour. And then it was funny because I said to my mate next to me, I said, all we need now is McAllister to pop one in. I said, it really wind the Wolves fans up. And then 5 minutes later, he does. He gets into the centre of the box, and it was a good header to put into the bottom corner.
Yeah, and it was a lovely pass, wasn't it, Tom, from Harvey Elliott, to set up the first goal. Gakpo went for it, missed it, and McAllister come in, from behind him. And as Pete said, it was a lovely header. And then not long after, there's a bit of a scramble from a corner. Mowat misses his shot, and Kwanzaa forced it over the line for his second goal in two games.
Yeah. I thought Maka's header was a beauty. On the sending off, Les, I didn't realise, I don't know from where you were, but from where I look, I seen the tackle, but I didn't see the severity of the tackles, you know what I mean?
I thought it was a bad one right from the way it go, but I was like, Pete, I thought it was two-footed at first.
Yeah. We're further over than you, so like you're nearer to that side of the pitch.
Yeah,
but I seen him go in, and I seen Maka get rolling all over the floor, and was, but it the thing Ali said to me at the time, he said, Van Dijk's gone over and looked at the monitor,
all right.
At the side, and like I thought that's a strange thing to do, like so he'd known anyhow, so and then he come back and was saying, afterwards, so after. So that's when I realised then that it must have been a bad one. Mac, a brilliant ball by Harvey Elliott, Les. I thought it was a great ball. And, and the littlest man on the pitch put him probably one of the best headers. It was a beautiful, beautiful headed goal. And well deserved. And Jarrell, as you say, another miss hit from Mo. Was the feature yesterday, a few couple of miss hits near the line, but and Jarrell put it in. I thought overall that was a fake. We were cruising there, weren't we? I thought it turned into the party when the second one went in.
Yeah, once the second one had gone in, Pete, there was no way that Liverpool were going to lose the game. It was just a case of whether Liverpool could get any more goals, and Wolves were sort of intent on, to limit the damage. They eventually went to five at the back. They did have a goal disallowed in the second half, which was a lot closer than I thought when I saw it back, but it was offside. And it was just a case then, the second half was just paid out as, this is it now, the last sort of remnants of Jürgen's tenure as Liverpool manager, so let's make sure we show him how much we love him, as if he didn't know that already. And then let's see what's going to be coming in the aftermatch. But Tom touched on it before. I've been going to the match since the 70s now. And touch wood, I haven't missed a game at home since 76, and I have to say that tribute to Jürgen Klopp. From about the 84th minute right through until the end of, the added time, which was 4 minutes, is probably one of the best I've ever heard. And as Tom said before, it was like a case of, it started and then everybody decided, right, this is the time now. We're all going to get up on our feet. And the noise, I've never heard anything like it. And I've been at Anfield now for, I've been going for, for more than 50 years. But for the last long me consecutive runners gone on for, I've never heard noise like that as constant or for so long.
Yeah, I think like you say, I think just picking up on a couple of points, I think once we came out for the second half, it was possession. I know they had they had the goal disallowed, and I thought it was well off. But when you look at it, it was a bit closer than that. And then he did have a good chance on the break, didn't he? Where we were pushing forward, and they over-egged it a bit. And I think Virgil got a block in, and I think that was possibly the only shot they had on target, in fairness. But yeah, I think everyone was, you know, looking up at the clock, and it was getting to 70 minutes and then 75. And then it just seems to be once we got into the 80 minutes, it just started this crescendo of noise. And like Tom was saying, if a few people started flagging in one stand, the other stand would take it up. And to see the whole ground standing up in unison, I think the last time I saw that, I mean, we probably in the dying seconds or the dying minutes of the Dortmund game and the Barcelona game. But I think when we had those 6 minutes added against Chelsea in the semi-final, and I think it was just out of sheer nerves, everyone stood up for that and they were trying to sing them home. But like you say, it was certainly for the last 10 minutes or even possibly more. And it was quite spine-tingling, to be honest, to be involved in it. I mean, it must have, I don't know what it sounded like on the telly. I've not spoken to anyone who watched it on the telly. But it must have come across on the telly, you know, of how noisy and how raucous it was. But to be in the middle of it was fantastic.
Pete, I watched it back just from that point last night when I got in on Sky. And even Carrot, who was doing the co-commentary, and the commentator says, "Wow," he said, "I've never heard Anfield as loud as this." He said, "It's just getting louder and louder and louder."
Yeah.
And you think to yourself, you know, there we are, you know, paying tribute to our manager. And, you know, 30-odd miles down the road, you know, the 115ers are winning the league by beating West Ham. And, you know, there's no way that the noise will be anything like the same as it was, you know, at Anfield yesterday for those final sort of 6 minutes plus injury time. It was absolutely amazing, Tom, wasn't it?
Oh. You know, for
Jürgen said to me, you know, and as Pete said there, you know, once the cop had like a 10-second blow, it'd be like the Kenny to be taking it up, and then, you know, Pete's main stand ulcers, and, you know, and it was just an amazing sight. And it did bring a lump to your throat, to be honest.
It did, you know, I was thinking that. Imagine Jürgen sitting there watching, and don't forget his family as well, sitting there watching that. And like, and it must have been incredible to listen to the rendition of "You Never Walk Alone." Jesus,
oh, it's fantastic!
It was just. I think the whole atmosphere for the whole game. It was just, but as you said, it turned into a crescendo at the end. You know, like, and I thought it was a lovely way. I had this conversation with our Kevin today, and like, his philosophy on football is totally different. You know, like to mine, and he was saying to me, "Do you know what?" He said, "The thing about," he said, "the thing he worries about Slot is," he said, "that he's coming." He said, "You know, like the thing about Jurgen Klopp was he was the draw to bring players in." And I said, "You know what? Any player who was watching, and there'd be lots of players from all around the world who'll have seen what happened with Jurgen Klopp yesterday. And I think any player who listened and watched that atmosphere yesterday would be thinking to themselves, I would love to be playing there and to be part of that." And I think I think that's going to be an asset for Arne Slot. I think that's going to be the pulling power as well. As well as having some quality players still there, young players there that are coming through, the draw of the atmosphere and the crowd. And I think that, you know what, I hope this continues, this, Les. I really do. And Pete, I hope that this is a thing that we're going to do from now on, you know, like, and drive forward. Because I think we're going to need the crowd, especially in the first year of his tenure.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, Tom, as you said there, you know, you mentioned there, you know, about, you know, when the, you know, Jürgen said to me, you know, was going round the ground after, you know, from the 84th minute onwards. And you said, you know, about Jürgen sitting there listening to it. Well, the cameras went first to King Kenny and Marina, and yeah. they're joining it. They're joining in, singing it from the director's box. So even in the director's box, they're singing it. And then it goes to Ula, and she's crying and she's clapping along and singing as well. And you can see even some of the players on the subs bench, you know, were clapping along. And it was just an unbelievable sight, you know, to see. And Jürgen's just sat back, smiling, listening to it and thinking, wow, you know, what a tribute this, you know, this fan base is paying to me. And like, I got, you know, as I said, I've heard nothing like it. And I think Pete summed it up when he said, you know, it was a privilege to be part of, wasn't it? You know, just to be in there and singing that song for like 10 whole minutes, you know, until the final whistle went. It was fantastic, wasn't it, Pete? You know, the...
Yeah. Have you ever seen that clip with Arsene Wenger and Mourinho? And I think it must have been in Madrid.
Yeah.
It could have been Madrid or Kiev. And
The pair of them were
absolutely dumbfounded with "You'll Never Walk Alone." And they're looking at it speechless. And I think in the end, I think Wenger says something about it's a thing of beauty, and Mourinho agrees. But I think we've got to give a little bit of credit to George Sefton here, because what he used to do was tail off "You'll Never Walk Alone." And it sounds a bit daft because it's only about 120 yards difference, but sometimes the cop would be out of kilter with the Annie Road, etc. If he keeps that going, as he has done for the last three or four matches, the whole Jerry Marsden version all the way through, everyone sings at the same time. And, you know, sometimes, the cop might quicken it up a bit, or the Annie Road, now that, as I say, with that upper stand. If he plays it all the way through, as he has been doing, the noise... I mean, I'm sitting here now. If we were on YouTube, you'd see the air standing up, talking about it on my arms. It's still giving us now, you know what I mean? And as I say, I've been in some great atmospheres, like you said. I mean, I remember since Essien and the Chelsea game and Dortmund and Barcelona. But for a domestic game, that was something else, that was yesterday. And it's just, you know, like I say, it was a privilege to be in it. And it was really just a shame that it was a send-off for Jürgen. But like we said in the last programme, all good things come to an end, and we just have to get on with the next job. Like,
yeah, so Tom, the final whistle goes, and then we wait, you know, to see what the club have got planned to pay tribute. And, you know, just being a sort of smothering of criticism, you know, saying that it was too much like of a PR exercise, if you like. But I don't look at it like that. I look at it as though it's what Jürgen would have wanted. And as it is sort of day, so to speak, there's no way he would have wanted all the attention to be on him. And the members of his coaching staff who got, you know, who were leaving and got sort of presentations yesterday, all thoroughly deserved, because what he's saying to the people in the stadium and those watching on the TV, that without these people, what I achieved wouldn't have been possible. So it was right that they all come out and got their, you know, 2 minutes of thank you, if you like.
Don't forget, Les, they've played a massive part, haven't they? You know, from the fitness coach to John Achterberg, even to the man who I didn't know, Ray, was it Ray?
Ray Alton.
Yeah. And, you know, like, right the way through, you know, like bringing out and, you know, introducing everybody. And you should, you know, like, Vitas and Matt Mateus and what's it called, Peter Kravitz and Anders Breinen, they've played such a key part. So we should celebrate them, really. It would be just unfair for Jürgen and not that Jürgen would do it. And I don't care what other clubs say. Other clubs can do their own thing, can't they? And, you know, like, and choose to do it. Arsenal chose to have a practice presentation before you're giving the trophies out before the kickoff. You know, just in case we won. You know, like,
it is
personally,
now,
I think I wouldn't have done myself.
Yeah, it is all choreographed, and that's, obviously to make things run smoothly and that. But it's also, I was trying to remember. I was saying to our Jack when Bob Paisley, we knew Bob Paisley was going, and I think, well, I remember to think on the day it was his last league game or his last game at Anfield, the cop were just singing his name to Amazing Grace.
Yeah.
Nothing choreographed where you were bringing people on. And I was saying to Jack about Shankly. I said, obviously, when Shankly went, it was in the close. It was after the season finished. I said, but he said, how many backroom staff have you got, Dad? I said, Christ, I don't know what it goes into now. I said, you've got analysts, dieticians, all that. I said,
Yeah.
when Shanks was about, you'd had Shankly, Reuben Bennis, Joe Fagan, Bob Paisley, and then a couple more, and you were struggling after that, weren't you?
Ronnie Moran.
Yeah, Ronnie Moran, and then you were struggling. You wouldn't have known if there was a fit, another fitness coach, or certainly not a dietitian. I think Shankly used to tell him to eat steak all the time, didn't he? But it is just the way football is now. Sorry,
It's
Tom.
good to see, isn't it, Peter, to see them
All
recognizing
right, yeah.
what they've done. And
Yeah.
I think that says it says more about our club as well. Like we have this mentality, don't we? People say we're melancholy in the way that we do things, but I don't think it is. I think it's respect for what you've done.
That it is.
And I think it's not a shock, is it, that Liverpool have had 17 managers in their history?
Yeah. I know.
Seventeen managers. Everton have had 22 in the last 15-20 years. Same with Chelsea. The same with Chelsea and other clubs. We're slightly different to other clubs, and I'm quite proud of the fact that we
Yeah.
are. I like that. That makes us unique.
I thought that each and every one of those people who come out, as your Jack said, and a lot of other fans, around by us were saying, who's this? Not another one coming out. But you have to remember that, the success that the club have achieved over the years, Jürgen's needed help. And
Yeah.
so, for those people to, for just to have walked away and not being given, 2 minutes of our time, or however long it took for each of them to come out, I think would have been a pretty poor show on our behalf if, all we want is Jürgen and maybe Pep Linders and what have you. But I thought they all got a really great reception from the crowd, including, especially Thiago and Joel Matip. And it made me funny. Joel Matip is just the butt of everybody's jokes, isn't he? Have you seen him when he's going along? He's walking through the guard
Yeah,
of honour, and they're
knocking
all
him on the
trying
head.
to hit him on the head. You know what I mean? And he's ducking and diving all over the place. And he will be, I think he will be so missed on the field because I think, now, as I said, the other night, he's probably the most underrated centre back to play in the Premier League era. I still think he had another couple of years that he could have given us, but I can understand, why the club haven't, because of his injury situation and his past, problems he's had with injury. But boy, will he be missed in that dressing room, Pete.
Yeah. Oh, I think I said a couple of programs ago that one of the things we have missed this season is a ball carrying centre half of the, akin to Joel Matip. I mean, I think that goal he scored against Leeds where he carried it 30, 40 yards, played a 1-2, and then buried it. But I was saying to Jack yesterday, I said, "Who do you reckon's the best free transfer signing? Would you say Joel or James Milner?" It took us a while to come to a decision. I think we both agreed possibly Jimmy Milner just shades it. But I'll tell you what, Joel Matip has been fantastic. And I didn't have a big chat with him, I'll be honest, but me and my lad went down to London a few years ago to watch Pearl Jam. And we stayed overnight. When we were in Euston, he actually came into the restaurant that we were in. And I said, I went over to him and said, "Joel, do you mind just a couple of photographs, me and me lad?" And he was as nicest fella you could meet, a lovely fella. And we didn't want to bother him too much, but it was no trouble for him. And some footballers can be quite aloof, can't they? And I just said, you know, good luck for the next season. And I jokingly said, you're not coming to Arsenal or anything, are you? And he just started laughing because we were down in London. But a
Yeah.
nicer fella you couldn't wish to meet, you know. And I'm with you. I think possibly, you know, another season. I know Jürgen sort of alluded to that earlier on in the season, didn't he, when he got the injury? And he said, hopefully the club will do the right thing. I think alluding to the fact that maybe give him another 12 months. But unfortunately, the business that we're in football-wise, there's no room for sentimentality, really. And I hope he moves on to, whether he goes back to Bundesliga or whatever, I'm not too sure, but I hope he gets a club because he deserves to play at the top level still.
Yeah.
Same with Thiago, in fairness. I mean, the only problem with Thiago is his injury record, but what a player he was, and I wish we'd have got him 3 or 4 years before we did get him when he was at his pomp, to be honest.
Yeah, Pete, Tom, sorry. I think as Jürgen said with Thiago, there was no doubt in his ability, but his body let him down. You know, just, you know, at the end of his, you know, what a fantastically technically gifted footballer that he was. You know, we seen little glimpses, you know, or cameos, if you want to call him that, of what he was all about. I think people should always remember when the, you know, when we talk about Thiago, that he was instrumental, wasn't he, in us getting into the Champions League in that season where Alisson ended up scoring, you know, the goal at West Brom, because it was when he coming back into the side after that horrendous tackle by Richarlison at Goodison, you know, and formed that partnership with Fabinho, that Liverpool's form started to pick up. And it was down really to them two, that who then gave the protection to Reece Williams and Nat Phillips at the back, that enabled Liverpool to do what they did and go on that run at the end of the season that secured us, you know, the place in the Champions League the following year, which then resulted in us getting to the final in, you know, in Paris. You know, so, you know, he did, and he played his part in that season as well, until he got injured at the wrong time of the season in the League Cup final and what have you. So he had a fantastically gifted footballer. And Joel Matip, you know, as I said, you know, he'll go down for me as one of Liverpool's all-time great centre backs, and can rightly be mentioned for me in the same breath as all the greats that have played in that position, certainly since I've been watching the Reds.
Yeah, that, I wouldn't argue with any of that, Les. I think, you know, the first time I come across Thiago as a player, or when I first watched it, it was 2000, it was 2019 when we played Bayern Munich at Anfield, you know, in the Champions League. I'd seen him before when he was younger, but in the 2019 game, the 0-0 game, he played as like just like as the sweeper, you know, just in front of the back four. And Jesus Christ, he was imperious to the game. He just bossed the game. I was sitting with our Louis that night, end up with our Lee that night, and like watching him. And I was saying, who's the number five? You know, the number five. I think he played five that night. So who's the number five? And he turned to me and he said to me, "That's Thiago." I said, "My God, he was absolutely brilliant. He was everywhere." And you know, he shut us out. We battered them down. We turned it round down in Germany 3-1 with Sadio's and Virgil masterclass. Like, I thought that night, you looked at a player at the best of his ability. And you know, like as you said, Les, would have loved to have got him a few years ago. But when he come to us, his body was sort of starting to struggle a little bit at that time. And he's been crippled with injuries, hasn't he, to be fair to him. And it's such a shame because he's still such a gifted player. Big Joel, as you said about Joel, nice, beautiful human being. Everybody in the club loves him. But not just that. As I said the other night on the podcast where we were chatting, In the 2019 season and the second half of the season, along with Virgil, he was unbelievable. Probably every bit as good as Virgil, and I thought Virgil was one of the best I've ever seen in that season. But Joel was right up there with him. But he's a player that never gets a mention, funny enough. But like, I think some real football lovers, you know a little bit about football. He was a quality player, and we had the same chat as Peter had with Jack about the best free transfer in the car going down. Me, Michael, and our case, but me and Michael were chatting, and we put it as a three, you know, like, and we put Babel at three, and Joel, we put James Milner at two. And put Matip at one. And like, it was weird, isn't it? You know, I thought James Milner was brilliant for us, but I think Matip overall, I think he deserves to be mentioned just ahead of James Milner.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, Tom. I'd sort of give it just to Joel, just to shade it. But you know, there isn't anything really between them, because they both achieved great things at Liverpool. You know, never let us down and bought into the philosophy of the club. And as I say, you know, but I would just edge Joel, I think. But as I say, it's so close to you. You know, you couldn't sort of blame anybody for going the other way. But yeah, so then at the end after Pep Linders and Peter Kravitz and Vita come out, and Pep Linders got a fantastic reception, Pete. Which I thought was well deserved. And then, you know, the main man come out, didn't he? And his speech was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah. I thought, as I say, that, I mean, I think there were a few tears, certainly off some of the players, you know, the likes of players that he's nurtured, you know, the Harvey Elliotts, the young lads that he's brought through, and sort of promoted to the first team. And I'm certain there was a few in the crowd as well. It was one of those moments, you know, spine tingling. But his speech was good. He tried to add a little bit of levity to it. He wasn't overly gushing, and you know, and he tried to introduce the worst, you know, the Europe's worst secret, that Arne Slot was going to be the new manager, by singing his name. But it was good, and I'm glad he didn't sort of. I think if he'd have broken down given his speech, I think it would have looked like Old Trafford last week. There'd have been tears everywhere. But no, it was great. It was a fantastic speech at the end, the way, you know, he thanked the players, obviously thanks the fans, and he more or less says, you know, I think he said, I don't know if he said it in the speech on the pitch, but he said it one of the recent speeches, that it's not what people think of you when you join somewhere, it's what they think of you when you leave. And that was just summed it up for me, that, you know, that he came in, and we obviously knew who he was from his Dortmund days, but we didn't know that much about him, how he was gonna transform this club. And I said to our Jack, I said, I hope he runs out with the flag, and he just said it's a big April Fool and he's staying for the next 5 years. And when I heard the news, funnily enough, when our Holly phoned me, because I was working from home the day it was announced, and she said, have you heard about Jurgen Klopp? And I said, oh, has he signed a new contract? She said, no, he's leaving. And I was absolutely gutted. And I honestly thought he might want to stay on. But I think he's out by his own admission. I think he's really tired now. I think he said something. He mentioned how many interviews he's done since his time here. And I think, you know, he's forever getting cameras and microphones pointed at him. And I think he's just come to the end of his time, really. He just needs to refresh, and good luck to him and his family, because they fully deserve it.
Tom, there's one thing I think that Jamie Carragher said when he was doing the co-commentary yesterday, and I thought it was quite apt, and I thought it was very true, to be honest. And he said in one of the interviews, he said, I heard with Jurgen Klopp, he actually said that he'd only been able to go down to the city centre in Liverpool twice. And one of those times was on the first night he joined the club. He said, and I think he made the right decision, because if there's one man in this city who could bring Liverpool City Centre to complete and utter halt. It'd be Jurgen Klopp, he said. And you'd need to get the police in to rescue him because he just gets surrounded. Yeah. He said he would. It would just be like, you know, if you can imagine Beatlemania, Jurgen Klopp walking down Church Street or Lord Street or something. Before you know where you are, there'd be like an army following him. Because he's that charismatic, isn't he?
That's what he's going to have to face now, isn't he? For the rest of his life at Liverpool, as he's walked away from here. Someone said yesterday, I think, you know, it doesn't matter. Wherever he goes in the world, he'll bump into a Liverpool supporter who'll come up and say to him, thank you for what you've done at Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I think that literally, what you just said there, Les, summed it up, doesn't it? And what Peter hit the nail on about talking about the interviews and everything, it's so true. Imagine, it's all-encompassing, the Liverpool job, isn't it? It's when you look at it for what it is, and if you're successful, and you're not only you're successful, you're charismatic, then it's a double whammy because people assume that you're going to be friendly and open, so they want to chat to you and they want to be open and chatty with you. So you've got to carry that all the time. You know, and I think as what Peter said, I think it's come to a time now where he needs a break. You probably won't see him for a year. By what he said at the end of the interview, or after the post-match stuff he done, where he said he's not talking about retiring, but he's talking about a good long rest. And I think you probably might see him go back to a manager somewhere, but he'll never, ever, ever, in wherever he goes or whatever he chooses to do, he'll never be as loved as he was at this club. And I think, you know, anything that he does in his life from now on, I think nothing will compare what he's achieved at Liverpool. I think that's the greatest. I think that's the greatest tribute you can give to Jurgen Klopp. I think he, to me and to people of my generation who've seen near enough everything of us being successful from Shankly onwards, and you think, well, you'll never ever see another Bill Shankly, but like we did, and for our kids and grandkids, you know, they'll be talking about Jurgen Klopp forever and a day, you know, about the experience of what Jurgen Klopp brought. And that's the greatest achievement you can give him, as he came, he saw, he conquered, basically.
Yeah. Peter, just summed up, you know, what we said earlier when we were talking about, you know, the presentations about Jurgen never wanted it just to be about him, right? He wanted to make sure that the people who'd helped him behind the scenes, his coaching staff who were leaving as well, were all going to take the plaudits. And I noticed that at the end of his interview or the speech, whatever you want to call it, that I think Pete McDowell said to him, now go down to the cop, and he said no. And he got all the coaches together.
Mm.
And then they walked down to the cop and, you know, did the big sort of run together, nearly taking the cameraman out on the way. And they all did the fist pumps to the cop. And I thought that was a real, real, real fitting tribute to them all, because that's what Jurgen Klopp, you know, is sort of, what's the word I'm looking for?
Philosophy, Les.
Yeah, it's his philosophy. And yeah. Also is, you know, what his thing is with the cop, if you see what I mean, when he does his fist pump.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
You know, people are right. You know, the likening them to Shankly, they're calling them the German Shanks and all that. But I think both the philosophy of both men was the same. I think it's almost like a socialist philosophy. They're not like, it's not just about them. It's about everyone who puts into that team, and that goes from like you probably go down to the cleaners in the Axis. You know, the Axis facility. You clean the floors and you do the offices and that, all the way up to the top. And that's just how he is. It's like that Shankly saying that the socialism that he believes in is that everyone should put into it, and everyone should have a share of the prize, if you know what I mean. So it's not all about him, and it's right what he said, but you do need someone who's a figurehead, who sort of, is the face of the club, if you want. And as I say, he came in 8.5 years ago, and apart from seeing what we'd seen when he did things at Dortmund and that, I don't think any of us really knew how charismatic he was going to be. And to be honest, every time he spoke, we were hanging on every word, weren't we? Just like we were with Shankly. If Shankly spoke, you listened to everything he said, and it's the same with Jurgen Klopp. But he also introduced a little bit of levity to it, any interviews, some of the interviews he did where he, I always remember, I think it must have been a European night. I think it was, I'm not too sure. And somebody mentioned to him Bayern Munich had lost. And he said, did they? And he just went, boom, in that when he does that thing. And it's just the way he just brings it. And I don't care what the opposition fans are, whether they're Everton, United, whatever. Deep down, he's going to be missed in the Premier League. He's going to be missed by so many people. I'm sure he's had run-ins with the press before. He's had interviews where he's been quite short with some of them, where they've asked some ridiculous questions. But I think deep down, they're all going to say he's going to be a big miss in the Premier League. And as I say, I mean, there's rumours already that he might be given the job at Dortmund as, director of football, whatever they want to call it. But I think, like Tom said, I think he's going to take a good time out, and he's going to be, pretty astute in what his next move is. And I think we've got to thank Ola as well, because I think she talked him into an extra 12 months. He wanted to go sooner. So congratulate, give her some. I think she loved the city. That's the thing. They actually embrace the. They know they get the city. Some people come into jobs and in football and that, and they don't actually get. They think it's just about the club. It's not. It's about everything else. And he gets it, and his family gets the city as well. They know what it's all about, and he's been fantastic for us. But as I say, I'm actually now looking forward to June 1st when the new guy starts to see what this brings us,
Yeah, Tom. And then the final part of the was when all the players then followed Jürgen down to the Kop end and stood arm in arm in front of the Kop while they were singing "You'll Never Walk Alone" with all the coaching staff. And I thought that was absolutely tremendous. I didn't think that was quite as good as Dortmund, because nothing will ever sorry, against Barcelona, nothing will ever beat that impromptu, get together in front of the cop. That's one of my, in all the time of being going to Anfield, that what happened at the end of the Barcelona game, where the players are all and the coaches are all stood in front of the cop singing "You'll Never Walk Alone," and some crying will be. I think it's my greatest ever memory of Anfield.
Do you know
That
what I
would
think
be
was? That
one.
was in celebration, that though, Les, wasn't it?
Yeah,
This is it's a different, it's a
yeah.
different. This is in time of recognition for what they've done and thanks. But the one at the Kop was with that was joyous, where we were
Yeah.
in the final. That was like a feeling like you never experienced. But I understand what you mean. But it was lovely, wasn't it? It showed the togetherness, and you could see the players. The players were upset as well,
Yeah.
which even to the one which shocked me, which you sent me, because I didn't notice that from where it
Yeah.
was. Virgil crying,
Yeah.
like he was quite emotional, and Trent again. You misread it then, because you seen him, what he said in the interview afterwards. He owed everything to Jürgen for his success and where he is today. And so there'd be a lot of people like that. Andy Robbo was another one who looked, broken as well.
Yeah.
Well, as it's like everything. It's like everything in life, isn't it? It's, like everything has a life cycle. And that life cycle was the best, probably the best nine years that we've had as Liverpool supporters for a long time. You know, and it's gonna take a lot to beat that. But like everything, you know, like these things come to an end and we move on to the next, you know.
Yeah. So, Pete, I'll ask you for, I've got one other thing to ask you in a minute, but before I forget, I'll ask you for your, I know it's probably incidental, but your player of the match yesterday.
I don't think anyone had a poor game, and to be honest, it was a bit comfortable in the end, wasn't it? When we went 2-0. I thought both the goal scorers had good games. I thought Quanta played well, although his goal was like from about 10 centimetres out, but he was there. McAllister had a great game as well. But you know what? I think overall, I think just shading it, I thought Harvey Elliott was fantastic again yesterday. And the last few weeks, he's almost been like a first choice in the midfield for me, Harvey Elliott. I think he's usurped the likes of Szoboszlai and Curtis Jones and that now. And once again, I thought he was everywhere in his passing and his energy yesterday as well. So I'd just shade it. I'd give it to Harvey.
Tom?
Pete's just picked out my three players there as for the best players on the pitch. But I've done it. Slightly difference. I thought McAllister had a brilliant game first of all. I thought he was excellent. Thought Harvey was brilliant in for about 75-80% of the game or 90% of the game, but there was little things that he didn't do. But again, it's that the end of the season game and it didn't really matter. But he was excellent, really. I'm going for Jarrell Quansah because I thought out of the three, I don't think many people would disagree with the three, but I just thought Jarrell, the last couple of games, he got skinned at Villa, but he learned from that quickly and was excellent. And again, yesterday, I thought he had a superb game. Never put a foot wrong, was quality all the way through. So I'm going to go for Kwanzaa.
Yeah, well, as I said, if I was going to give the man a match to a player, I would have given it to Kwanzaa. I thought that he, you know, as a player, he was consistently much better than the rest, but I'm going to give it to the crowd yesterday. I thought that the crowd inside Anfield yesterday were absolutely magnificent. So every red that was in there yesterday, take a bow, and you're my men, women, and children of the match yesterday. Absolutely superb. Tom, just one thing I want to finish on, and you know, I'm a great believer in football, in the things happen for a reason, right? And like, while it hurt that we went on that bad run, and we got knocked out of the Europa League, and then we had that dodgy run, you know, in the league. You know, we got knocked out of the FA Cup. I just wonder whether it was meant to be that we just went into this last game of the season purely as a tribute to Jürgen, rather than having to, you know, be glued to our, you know, our mobile phones and getting the scores from, you know, the empty ad. You know, next, you know, what was happening. We've been through that before and it's not nice. And, you know, just imagine, I was only thinking when I was laying in bed last night, just imagine if it would have been like it was like 3 years ago, where, you know, we're playing Wolves last game of the season and the 115ers have gone two down and it's Jürgen's last game. Ooh. And then all of a sudden, you know, it ends like it ended. That Ooh. Would have just sort of put like an even bigger pin in the balloon, wouldn't it? Where yeah. Yesterday, as we've all said, you know, the way it was just a magnificent tribute in the end, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think also as well, as I think it was fitting the way it finished, wasn't it? And like, We could have been in the Europa League final next week, and like then all the fans wouldn't have got the chance to say goodbye. It wouldn't have been a real goodbye. So we would have gone to Dublin. But I think, and also, imagine if we'd have won all kinds of stuff, and Arnest Lock had to come into that.
Yeah.
You know, the following season with that amount of pressure on him. So I think as it happens, for the reason, I think it's a good thing, isn't it, that now he comes in with a little bit less pressure.
Yeah. Pete, I was watching Match of the Day and I watched little bits of the Arsenal game, and it showed you after about 5 minutes, Arsenal fans, get pictured in the crowd, and they're on the mobile phones, and they're saying, oh, City have scored already. And basically, they knew once that had happened that it's all over. And it just kills your day, doesn't it? You know what I mean? It really does.
Yeah, I think I said on the last podcast, actually, I said I'm glad in a way that we're not having to win to do anything for the last game, because, like you say, it detracts from, from the celebration, really, of what Jürgen's done. But I didn't. I think I saw a couple of minutes of. I think it might have been on Sky, and they were showing you minute by minute how it was going at the Etihad and at Arsenal. And I think when it went to 2-1 for City, when West Ham got a goal back, they showed you these Arsenal fans, and they were going, come, and they were praying, and they were, come on, West Ham. And I thought, yeah, we've been in that position, and thank God we were in it yesterday, to be honest, because like you say, it would have detracted from the day it was. And, we've had so many great days and nights following Liverpool since Jürgen's been, and like you say, it was probably meant to happen that we weren't going to win it. I think when it was announced and that, we were hoping, we'd get more than just one League Cup. We were looking forward to hopefully a trip to Dublin and possibly go on a run and win the league, but it wasn't to be. And probably like you say, it was meant to be the way it was. And we've said our goodbyes to this regime, and we're looking forward to the new start now,
Tom, there's just some breaking news before we finish. Mo Salah's just confirmed that he's looking to stay at Liverpool. What's your instant reaction to that?
Well, funny enough, Les, I had this conversation with you last night on the phone as I was walking the dog. And I said what our lead said to me about seeing out. Mo would want to go out under, not just under his terms, but he'd like to go out when he does go out with the same sort of ending as Jürgen and Bobby has got, rather than the one like Mane got where he sold in between. And so I think I'm not surprised at that, really. I think it's a big gamble for Mo, because although I think he'll be used during the season, I'm not sure that he'd be a first choice for the whole season. You know what I mean? So I'm over the moon that he is staying, because I think we need stability. I think we need the likes of Mo to stay. I think we need the likes of Virgil to stay. I think we need the likes of Alisson to stay to bring these young kids through, and any new players that come in. So I'm not really shocked, to be honest. So happy in a way, but
I mean, we all suspected, didn't we, Pete, that, Mo would at least look to see out the remaining year of his contract. And he's done a very similar thing, hasn't he, that he's done, a couple of years ago, just before the final in Madrid, when he announced again, I've got 1 year left on my contract.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be staying here next season. So what he does, he puts the ball then in the club's court, doesn't he? Are you going to offer a contract? And if you don't, then I'm happy to stay here next season and sort of, then walk away on a free. I think the slight difference this time is that Mo's obviously a couple of years older, and his numbers aren't quite the same as they were at that point. So whether which way the club will look at that, I don't know. I don't, because I think they're in a lose-lose situation in many ways, aren't they? Because if they give, based on his performance in the second half of the season, if they give him a 1 year or 2 year extension, then, how's his form going to be at that point? It really is a sort of, a toss of the coin and just a gut feeling that he can get back to anything like the Mo Salah we know and love, and the Mo Salah who's clinical in front of goal. And one thing I would say, and I don't know whether you agree with this, Pete, but if Mo is going to stay and be part of, the future under Arne Slot, I think he's got to be moved from his right wing position and play as the number nine. I don't know what you think about that.
I said that. We were talking, we always, at the last game of the season, when we go for the drink after the game, we always go through and say, who would you keep and who would you sell? And obviously, I think there are going to be more names than just the two that we've spoken about tonight. And funnily enough, one of the names that I said, I'm not saying I would sell him, but I expected it might happen, was Mo Salah. I thought if Liverpool got an offer of ridiculous amounts from, from the Arabs in the summer, that Liverpool would be up for selling him. But at the end of the day, the player holds the cards, to be honest. And what he's, if he's saying that he wants to stay, is quite cute. But I can't see that Liverpool are going to give him a contract extension on the same money or even more money because of his age. Normally, the older you get, you have to agree to contracts where your money drops a bit. It's just the usual thing that happens with footballers as they get older. The sort of right diminishes to high wages. So I don't know. As I say, June 1st can't come soon enough for me, because then Arne Slot can. The only thing that's going to get in the way of these international games, but Arne Slot can look at the current squad. But I was thinking that Mo could have been one of the ones that. Not necessarily be sacrificed, but if an offer came in, Liverpool would seriously think of accepting it. But I think his form from the turn of the year hasn't been brilliant, but he's got such high standards. I mean, he came to Liverpool from Rome, and I don't think any of them expected him to do the figures, the numbers that he's put, goals and assists since he's been here, and he hasn't really had a dip in form until this season. But hopefully he'll come back refreshed for August, and we'll see the old, the Mo Salah that we used to for the previous 4 or 5 years. But I still think there may be other names, but we'll probably, I dare say, have a podcast in the close season to discuss ins and outs, who we think might be staying and who might be coming in. So we'll leave that for another night.
Yeah. So on the day after Jürgen Klopp's last game for Liverpool, we will all say thank you to Jürgen for 8.5 fantastic years. Can we all turn the clock back and go through those 8.5 years again, please, Jürgen? Wouldn't change anything for the world. Well, maybe just a couple of results here and there. But it's been a fantastic journey. Not a journey that none of us could have foreseen when you first joined. So thank you, Jürgen. Good luck in the future, and you'll be welcome on the Kop or any stand around field anytime you like, and you're a Scouser. Anyway, on that note, we'll end this.
Les,
edition.
Can I just,
sorry,
can
Tom. Yeah.
Can I just say one thing before you wrap up? I'd like to say a big thanks to everybody. It's our 100th podcast tonight, and I think it's quite fitting that our 100th podcast turned out to be Jürgen Klopp's final one. I'd like to say thank you to everybody that supported us and everybody that's listened to the podcast. Without people listening to it, we wouldn't carry on as what we're doing. So a big thank you to everyone. And sorry to interrupt, go on.
No, Oh, well said, Tom. I didn't realise that, but no, thank you for saying that, Tom. It's really a worthwhile thing to interrupt the end of the podcast for. So well done. So as I said, thanks to everybody who's listened tonight. As you always end the podcast by saying, justice for 97. Don't buy the sun. You'll never walk alone. And thanks, Jürgen. Until next time, see you soon.